Welcome to the South Florida Roundup. I'm Danny Rivero.
And I'm Katie Swatowski-Munoz.
We're filling in for Tom Hudson this week.
And we're going to cover all things election.
What voters can expect on Election Day Tuesday. Hint, we won't know who won.
We'll also look at some of the potential legal and vote-by-mail challenges.
And we are in South Florida after all. A look back at the 2000 presidential election to see what we've learned.
And what it can teach us going into this one. Your election questions and phone calls coming up on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Made possible by Willie the Beeman, Bee Removal Specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Katie Swatowski-Munoz.
And I'm Danny Rivero, filling in for Tom Hudson this week. We're just days away from the election day. Over half of registered Florida voters have already voted.
Voter turnout is expected to be high, potentially surpassing the 2016 vote totals.
Florida's elections offices have already begun counting, but there's still plenty of work on election night. All this hour on the Roundup, what to expect on election day? The winner probably won't be known Tuesday night.
We want to hear from you. What questions do you have about counting the votes? What's been your experience at the polls or with vote by mail? Call us at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. And you can also tweet us at WLRN.
Charles Zeldin is a political science and history professor at Nova Southeastern University in Davie. Thanks for joining us, Professor Zeldin.
Glad to be here.
So Florida has already been counting votes, and unlike some states, we have the advantage of starting to open and count vote-by-mail ballots 22 days before an election. Tell us a little bit more about what those efforts at election offices look like right now, just a few days out.
Well, they're counting any mail-in ballots that are arriving at this time. Most of their efforts now, though, are focused on making sure that the various polling sites for Election Day are going to be set up and run smoothly. And they're preparing for a large number of votes to come in on Tuesday night. And at that point, they'll also get the results of all the ballots that they've been counting early while the ballots are counted. Nobody knows what the results are until Election Day.
And we know that millions of Floridians have already voted by mail this year, and which is a big increase from even 2 years ago, the midterm elections, and certainly from 2016. What changes have election offices made, if any, to deal with this really sharp increase?
Well, a couple things. One, they've staffed up. So they've hired and trained more staff to handle the large number of mail-in ballots. They've also updated their equipment for counting. One of the problems we had in 18 with the recounts is that in Broward and especially in Palm Beach County, the machines they used to count were old and slow. And in the case of Palm Beach County, literally it broke. Whereas in Miami-Dade County, they had newer machines that counted at a faster rate, and thus they had no trouble in meeting deadlines. So in the interim, what has happened in Broward and in Palm Beach County is they've gotten new equipment so they can handle this mass of votes. The fact that they're able to count votes early, 22 days early, means that they're able to count them in manageable batches as they come in each day, as opposed to having hundreds of thousands of ballots to count on Election Day with their machines in the vote counting center.
And particularly in Palm Beach and in Broward County, where there was pretty widespread issues in 2018 midterm, where do things stand? Are you more optimistic that we won't be seeing those same kind of issues this time around with all those changes you just described?
Well, hopefully, yes. Expecting this is Florida. I don't expect
of course
good things to happen when it comes to voting. But But seriously, the big issue is not how many votes come in, but how close is the vote. When there's a couple percents between the winner and the loser, the fact that there's 0.1% of the vote that may be causing problems isn't going to change the effect of the election. So while they still want to count them properly, it's not going to be the thing upon which the vote is decided. When you get down to recount territory, less than 0.5% gap, and hand recount territory, less than 0.25% gap, then 0.1% of the votes having problems being read or running through the machines can become the difference between winning and losing. And at that point is when we start seeing the problems come up. But the key element that caused problems in 2018, which was, you know, old machines, has been taken care of.
And speaking about those really close margins, that's a persistent issue in Florida politics. It's a feature of it, basically. Elections experts say that over 15,000 ballots statewide are going to be rejected unless they're cured in some kind of way. And that's larger than the split in the U.S. Senate race just 2 years ago. So it's a fairly small number in terms of the total amount of voters, but even that can have an impact. What options are available to a voter under Florida law if their mail-in ballot has been rejected up to this point?
Okay, what you need to do if you've mailed in a ballot, whether you hand-delivered it or you send it to the U.S. Post Office, is you need to go online to the webpage of the supervisor election of your county, and there'll be a link that you can click to find the status of your ballot, and it'll show the status from mailed to received to processed to counted. Literally, in Broward County, it says voted. If you get there and you look and you see that your ballot has arrived but hasn't been voted yet, you need to contact the Supervisor of Elections office, ask for the status of your ballot, and what you may have to do is go in and basically show your ID to prove you are who you say you are, since the most common problem with a mail-in ballot is a lack of a proper signature match. But there's always going to be a melt-off of ballots that just don't meet all the requirements to be counted through mail-in balloting. The key is to keep it as small as possible. Mm-hmm. And given the millions of votes in Florida, you know, a few thousand votes, while tragic for the individual voter, is to be expected. But in Florida, we have the right to cure a ballot. So if you know there's a problem and you go in, they can have you re-sign it. They can have you show an ID. There are things they can do to show that this is your ballot. And once they know it's your ballot, they can then open it up, put it in the pile, and count it.
Right. And do we have any sense of, on a county-by-county basis, how many of these ballots are still pending?
Well, there's a number of ballots in Broward County and actually Miami-Dade County as well, where ballots were mailed out, but they haven't been received yet. Now, we don't know how many of them are going to come in this weekend. At this point, if you still have a ballot, a mail-in ballot, and you want to use it, you pretty much need to plan on dropping it off at an early voting site. If you put it in the mail, it won't arrive in time.
Right. And if someone requested a mail-in ballot and up to this point they haven't received it in the mail, what is that person to do?
Just show up to an early voting site and say, I want to vote. You may have to vote provisionally, which is the same ballot, just it gets put to the side. And what they'll do is after Election Day, they'll check. And if no mail-in ballot came in your name, then your provisional ballot becomes your ballot and it'll get counted.
Right, and you'll be able to do that on Election Day itself as well, right?
And also on Election Day. Now, if you did receive your mail-in ballot and you still want to vote in person, just bring it with you, hand it to the people. They will put it in a box to be shredded, and they will print you on a new ballot, and you can just vote live.
Got it. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Danny Rivero, filling in for Tom Hudson this week. We're speaking with Charles Zeldin, a history and political professor at Nova Southeastern University. We're talking about what to expect on Election Day on Tuesday.
And I'm Katie Switalski-Munoz, also filling in for Tom Hudson this week. Election Day is Tuesday, November 3rd. You still have until that day to drop off your vote-by-mail ballots. Locations are listed on your county's election websites. Call us at 800-743-WLRN. The number to call in is 800-743-9576. Let us know what your questions are about counting votes and what do you want to know about the process. Call us, 800-743-9576, and you can tweet us at WLRN. Let's go to a caller. Richard in Wilton Manors is online too. Are you with us, Richard?
Okay, so you just touched on my subject. I decided last minute to order a mail-in ballot. I got it about a week ago. I'm still looking at some other issues besides president. I could walk it over in Wilton Manors to the women's club and drop it off there, or I could go and I could say, here, shred this, I want to vote in person. I guess I lived through 2004, the election following Bush versus Gore, and I remember attorneys being in line, and we were all worried where the fraud was going to occur. So at this point, I want to know what is the best way to assure my vote will be counted in a timely manner.
That is a great question, Richard. Thank you for sharing that 2004 memory with us. I'm going to let Professor Charles Zeldin answer that one for you.
Well, if the way that you know your ballot will be counted most is if you actually vote in person, because you're the one putting it through the scanner. So you literally know it's been scanned. Now, there's always the question of, will those numbers go to the main number, you know, to the main office? But that happens. When you hand in the mail-in ballot, you still have the question of, will your vote signature match? But assuming it does, that will be counted as well, and that will be counted at roughly the same time as the ballots come in. From the day of voting. So if you're going to vote early, it's probably safest just to give up your mail-in ballot and vote in person. But if you do choose to drop off your ballot in the box, because one thing happens if you're dropping off your mail-in ballot at an early voting site, you can walk up, put in the box, and walk away. So you're not waiting in line, which minimizes contact with other people vis-a-vis COVID. As long as your signature matches your signature, just say it matches the signature you have on your driver's license, you should be fine. It will get counted.
Thank you for that. And we have another call. We have Tim in Miami Beach. Tim, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. And here's my question. I'm wondering what happens as far as the county is concerned with vote-by-mail ballots that are surrendered in order to be able to vote in person. Are they subtracted from the outstanding vote-by-mail ballots or not?
Well, they count up the numbers that they get, and basically they shred them. And so basically what they'll do is when you turn in your ballot, they will mark down that you've turned in an empty ballot. Now you are no longer part of the group of people with mail-in ballots, and then you're able to vote live.
Okay.
So the count balances out.
Thanks, Professor Zeldin. You've given us a little bit of a preview already looking at this, but let's kind of flash forward to 7 p.m. on Election Day, November 3rd. What happens inside the elections office right at 7:01 p.m. when the polls close? What's that look like?
Well, if we're lucky, a very orderly chaos. What they'll be doing is they'll be getting in the votes from the precincts. They'll be tabulating those votes. They'll match that with the votes that have now become available to them from early voting. And they will begin to collate them and then post them, send them to the state for posting. So we all know what the vote totals are from the county. So in Florida, because we have not only early voting, but we can count early votes early, the first votes that will actually go out to the state will be the early votes, the mail-in ballots and those who voted early. And then after that will come the votes of the people who voted on the day of the election, because there's a period of transportation from the polling place to the collation center.
And so in what order are the votes counted? Does it go early voting first, then vote by mail? And I'm wondering if that process varies by county, because as you know, we have part of the state of Florida in the panhandle that is an hour behind us. So we're here watching in South Florida on Eastern Standard Time while they're an hour behind.
True. And technically, we shouldn't be releasing numbers until after 8 o'clock Eastern Time. To all the polls are closed in Florida, but they will already have begun to send the numbers to the state. It's a question of when the state posts them. Actually, since they're voting, since they're counting the votes as they come in, the votes that will be sent up initially will be all of the early mail votes that have already been counted, plus all of the early votes, in-person votes, that will have been counted and collated. And then they'll do the votes that come in on the day of the election. Now, any mail-in votes that come in this weekend, say, or Monday, they will probably then be the last to be counted. Because once the day of election begins, those ballots will probably put aside until everything is cleared up, and then they will count those ballots.
And I want to ask, you compare the role of an elections office on election night to an offensive lineman in football. What do you mean by that?
think about when you're watching the Dolphins. Whenever you hear somebody mention the name of an offensive lineman, it's usually because they made a mistake. They did holding, or they allowed a sack. If you're an offensive lineman, the last thing you want to do is have your name be mentioned on the TV, because they only mention it when you make a mistake. So, essence, if you don't hear about the elections office, that means they're doing their job. That means nothing's going wrong. So, ideally, what we want to do, like with an offensive lineman, is we just don't want to hear their name until after the event, when people say, hey, he did a really good job. But during the time, it's usually only if a mistake is being made.
And Danny and I both really want to know this, but when will we know if we're headed for any recounts? Florida's got these famous razor-thin margins.
Fingers crossed, of course.
Yeah, definitely. It's simple. Florida's is got very clear recount procedures. You don't have to ask for a recount. If the vote total is a gap between the candidates is less than a half of a percentage point, that's an automatic machine recount. We rerun all the ballots a second time. In the process, we will kick out any ballot that doesn't register a vote, and we will isolate them to the side. If at the end of that recount, the numbers have shrunk down to less than a quarter percent gap, quarter of 1% gap, then there will be a hand recount. But a hand recount today doesn't mean that we hand recount every ballot. What happens is all the ballots that did not register a vote will then go to the canvassing board, and they will seek to determine if you can figure out the intent of the voter on that ballot. If they can, it'll be included. If they can't, it'll be left to the side.
Professor Zeldin, stick around. We have lots more on the elections to discuss. Election day is only days away. I'm Danny Rivero.
And I'm Katie Spitalski-Munoz. We're filling in for Tom Hudson this week. Still to come, we'll talk more about recounts and the legal efforts that could happen after election night. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Katie Switalski-Munoz.
And I'm Danny Rivero, filling in for Tom Hudson this week. We're talking about what to expect on election night with Charles Zeldin. He's a political science and history professor at Nova Southeastern University. The phone lines are open, 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. And tweet us at WLRN. Florida has a history of close races. This means recounts and lawsuits are likely. Professor Zeldin, How long would a machine recount take if we get to that half a percentage difference that you were just talking to before the break?
The state sets a very specific deadline. All recounts must be completed within 5 days of the end of the election. So it can happen sooner than that. Miami-Dade, for example, in 18, finished their recounts, both machine and then hand recounts, with a day left to go. Broward and Palm Beach County had trouble making the deadline. But the machines right now are very fast. They're very fast scanners. So rerunning the ballots through the scanners takes time because there's literally hundreds of thousands of ballots to run. But it wouldn't be as slow as you would think. And, you know, it's definitely faster than they were in the days of the IBM machines and Chads.
I'm curious, Professor Zeldin, so thinking about Florida's history with recounts, we remember 2018 with our gubernatorial election, that series of recounts that took about 2 weeks to complete. So how long could a machine recount take given the deadlines for certifying the results at the state level? How does that or recount change those deadlines?
Actually, it doesn't change the deadlines. And while it felt like 2 weeks, it really wasn't. It was really only about 5 days. That the process happened. The schedule is that it's a little longer than 5 days, but what you have is you have a set of days, 3 to 5 days, to count the ballots and get your total, your unofficial total, into the state. From that, they determine whether there needs to be a recount. The recount then has an additional 5 days to be run. Both machine and, if necessary, hand recounts. At that point, the counties have to send their numbers to the state. And by that point, overseas mail-in ballots will have arrived because they have 10 days after the election to arrive and be counted. And then the canvassing board, state canvassing board, meets. They certify the election and it's over.
And I should clarify, the whole process took about 2 weeks, not the recount
yes.
part itself.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a built-in delay to allow mail-in ballots from abroad to come in to deal with any possible recounts. So generally, the meeting of the state canvassing board to certify the vote is roughly 2 weeks after the election.
And if you could just sort of clarify, the canvassing board is the supervisor of elections and usually two judges in a county looking at these votes.
That's the county canvassing board. There's also a state canvassing board, and that's made up of the Secretary of State, the supervisor of the Department of Elections, and I forget who the third person is. I think it's the governor. And they then certify the final results coming from each county.
And if we're looking at the possibility of recounts, usually there's a flurry of attorneys around a recount process. Who is involved in the physical recounting?
The way it works, and by the way, this is happening now already as they're arguing over should we include or not include, count or not count a mail-in ballot, is when there's any question, it goes before the canvassing board and the parties send a lawyer, each of whom has a chance to make their case on whether it should or shouldn't be included. And that process continues during the hand recount phase.
You're listening to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Katie Spitalski-Munoz.
And I'm Danny Rivero, filling in for Tom Hudson. We're speaking with Charles Zeldin. He's a history and politics professor at Nova Southeastern University. He studies Florida recounts. The state has a long history of close elections and vote counting issues after Election Day. Now I'd like to bring in Jason Blank. He's an elections lawyer with the firm Haber & Blank in Fort Lauderdale. He represents Democratic candidates during recounts and other problems related to elections. Jason, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
So your role, as I understand it, as an elections lawyer, begins weeks before an election, right? What are you guys doing now, a couple days before?
Yeah, that's correct. As Professor Zeldin kind of touched on, you know, the actual counting of ballots started 22 days prior to the election. And what we're doing with our clients and what we're doing in the counties in which we are representing people is watching the canvassing boards and watching the supervisor of elections offices to ensure that the Florida law is being followed and the procedures put forth to make sure that every vote is counted if it's eligible to be counted and to make sure that there are no anomalies that might be coming about.
And what kind of training do you go through, if any, before a presidential election to kind of get yourself, build up your muscles that you need to power through this kind of thing?
Sure. So somebody in my shoes who handles, you know, local elections, statewide elections, you know, countywide elections, we're in this both in presidential years and non-presidential years in those midterm elections. But when we work with a lot of our staff and a lot of our volunteers who help out on these large-scale campaigns, we often make sure that they are updated on any changes in the law and that they get refreshers on what the proper procedures are. A lot of times the procedures will be changed from cycle to cycle, but those changes are very small. And we want to make sure that that they are up to date on everything that the canvassing boards and that the supervisors' offices are supposed to be doing, because we don't want to interfere at all. We just want to make sure that voting is happening and that you know, every Floridian's vote counts if it's supposed to be.
And we've seen some major lawsuits filed in other parts of the country, like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and I believe North Carolina. Are there any lawsuits already pending or queued up here in Florida so far?
So yeah, we've seen a few lawsuits that have already been through the courts and are in the courts as to some of the more unique parts of the Florida election code. We don't have the same situation as does Pennsylvania or Wisconsin or even North Carolina, because the laws in Florida changed after the 2000 election. And candidly, Florida has some of the most progressive and most strong election laws when it comes to procedure. We fixed a lot of these problems because, as we all know, we faced them. So our legislature has taken the steps to set forth in our Florida election code a good, strong process to ensure that votes are counted. Now, of course, like we saw in 2018, sometimes that goes awry, and litigation has to be taken up. I've been part of multiple lawsuits in regard to that. But what we see now is there was some litigation early on, especially relating to COVID, to ensure that and try to make sure that voters were able to safely cast their ballots or hand deliver, their vote by mail ballots with as little risk as possible. But a lot of times, and in most cases, you're going to see litigation come about last minute, because those cases might not become ripe or they might not become really relevant until we know that a problem has affected voting.
And how have things changed for you this year as an elections attorney, given the increase in vote-by-mail ballots?
Yeah, so what we did is early on, myself and many of my colleagues were watching, knowing that we were going to get such an increase in vote-by-mail ballots into the counties, to determine what steps each county might be taking to affect the COVID threat. Again, it's one thing to ensure that as many people as want to can get a vote-by-mail ballot, but to ensure that they're counted is another. We saw delays in the U.S. Postal Service, even during the presidential primary election, which raised a lot of eyebrows and set off some alarms for many people to say, hey, you know, if I mail in my ballot, I want to make sure it's counted. I don't want to run into this situation where on election day, I'm sitting there wondering if my vote was received. So you saw a lot of, supervisor of elections around the state come together to put these drop boxes at as many places as they can, expand the times and days that they could to ensure that our voters could drop off those boxes. And we as election lawyers were working with them to try to expand that as much as possible, because our goal is to, again, make sure that every vote counts. We want every eligible vote to count for our clients or for our candidates or for, you know, Floridians as a whole. What you'll see with a lot of times with election lawyers is, yes, we might be in court litigating various issues on either side, but at the end of the day, we all want a fair process that counts the votes.
And we have a call now, actually. Ben, are you on the line? You there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Please go on.
Yes, your guest seems to be implying that you must bring your mail-in ballot with you to vote in person, either early or at the polling place, and that is not true. Even if you forget your ballot, even if your dog ate your ballot at home, you can still go to the polls and vote in person, either early or at your polls.
Professor Zeldin, would you like to respond?
Yes, he is completely correct. You don't need to bring it in. But let's call it best practice to bring it in if you've got it. That way they can know that you have turned in the ballot and you can vote regular. If you don't have it, they're likely to ask you to fill out a provisional ballot. Provisional ballots are a real ballot. They'll get counted, but they get counted last after they've assured that your mail-in ballot didn't arrive by 7 p.m. on election day.
Thank you. Thank you. So Jason, we've been hearing from elections officials that we should think about this year's election rather than a day. We should be thinking about it as kind of a season or a month. How are you keeping this in mind as you advise your clients about how to respond or how to track the results on Tuesday night?
Yeah, a lot of that has to do with, an approach that this is a marathon and not a sprint. You know, we've become accustomed many years to getting our election results immediately at 7 o'clock or 7:05 when that first batch of results from early voting and vote by mail come in, and we can see the results and say, the margin's so large, we pretty much know who the winner is. But with the sheer volume of votes that are occurring, and let's be clear, it's not just vote by mail. We're seeing an increase in early votes. We're seeing an increase in vote by mail requests and returns, more so than we've ever seen before. It's a wonderful thing. Floridians are voting. They are casting their vote to make their voice heard, and that's great. But what I'm telling a lot of my clients is, look, we may not have an answer Tuesday night. We may not have an answer Wednesday night. Just like in 2018, where we saw that, we didn't have an answer for 2 weeks in the Senate race, in the gubernatorial race, in the Commissioner for Agriculture race, and in some local races like one of the House districts that I represented a candidate for up in Palm Beach County. If we have to go through a recount procedure, it's going to take time. And it can take up to 12 days after Election Day until those official returns are reported up to the state. So everybody has to be prepared to kind of sit back and watch if the recount process occurs. Now, when you're talking about a multi-state election like president, obviously there are multiple factors that come into play beyond that in Florida. You're going to have the other states like Pennsylvania and like Wisconsin who cannot even begin to count those vote-by-mail ballots until election night. That varies from Florida. We're getting a head start. Our law allows us to get a head start on the vote-by-mail ballots so that we can get numbers up to the state to be officially certified sooner. But in those states that don't, they could take longer. We shouldn't have that problem here in Florida.
And Jason, it sounds like with the 22-day period for us to open and start counting vote-by-mail earlier than other states, it looks like that puts Florida in a better position than some of those other states like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania that have to wait. I'm curious, we have that because, in part, we have that more time because of what happened in 2018. And you represented a client in a 2018 state house race in Palm Beach County. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about what that experience was like 2 years ago.
Sure. Yeah, I represented a candidate for House up in Palm Beach in 2018 who was one of the four recounts going on. And as Professor Zeldin noted earlier, in 2018, Palm Beach County had these large machines that were scanning ballots, but they were old, they were slow, they were burning up and breaking down. And what happened was we were afraid they were going to run out of time. If the clock runs out and that recount is not completed, then the original unofficial results are the ones that become official. For my client, that was bad. We were behind. So we actually sued the supervisor of elections and we sued the Secretary of State of Florida and said, hey, our client, our district is completely within the confines of Palm Beach County. These other statewide races have other counties that are coming into play, but Palm Beach County supervisor, Palm Beach County Canvassing Board, you should be focusing on us first. And the Canvassing Board said, well, we don't have any guidance on what order these recounts should be done on. There's no law that tells us, no rule that tells us. So we sued in federal court. And ultimately, the judge said, Canvassing Board, you have an obligation to your local constituency. You get to make the decision. If you believe that that's the right way to go, then go with God and make your decision. And the Canvassing Board agreed. And they said, we have a duty to our citizens of Palm Beach County to count the race that is completely within our county first. And ultimately, our recount proceeded before the statewide recounts.
Jason Blank is an elections lawyer with the firm Haber & Blank in Fort Lauderdale. He represents Democratic clients on what to do in the event of a recount and other voting issues. Jason, many thanks for joining us on the Roundup.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm Danny Rivero, filling in for Tom Hudson this week.
And I'm Katie Swetolski-Munoz, also filling in for Tom Hudson this week. We're joined by NSU politics professor Charles Zeldin, talking about the final days of the election and what to expect on Tuesday night. Stick around. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Katie Switalski-Munoz.
And I'm Danny Rivero, filling in for Tom Hudson this week.
It's been 20 years since the 2000 presidential election. The memory of that close race, 537 votes, left a lasting mark on Florida elections. Charles Zeldin, politics professor at Nova Southeastern University, is back with us.
And we're going to welcome him to the show, Miami Herald politics editor Amy Driscoll. She covered the 2000 presidential election and wrote about how that experience is shaping election coverage today for the Nieman Foundation at Harvard. Amy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
So you covered the 2000 presidential election, and I'm curious, what stands out to you when you look back at that time from the vantage point now of 2020?
Well, I think at the time most people were taken by surprise. I think no one ever expected there to be 6 weeks of chaos in the United States. That was just something that had never happened before. And, you know, the entire eyes of the world were on the country and on Florida during our recount, which was eventually called off by the U.S. Supreme Court, and George Bush prevailed. But, you know, looking back, I think that the sort of the inability to forecast that and to understand how it would all, you know, go with all the legal challenges was something that really took us all by surprise at the time. And then, you know, just the idea that Florida would play such an amazing role in all of that. You know, the recounts, the trucking ballots up and down the states, the you know, the sheer, you know, volume of work that it took to figure out what was going on was really remarkable. And now that we look at that today, we have, you know, a better perspective on what might happen now. I think Florida, as one of your previous guests said, has certainly changed its laws to stop some of that from happening. But I think the echoes are still there. And I think we were scarred as a country by that. And so as we head into this election, I think there's a lot of trepidation.
And a lot of that trepidation has come not so much in Florida because of the election laws and procedures. From what I understand, we're in pretty good shape. But there is a lot of swirling disinformation and whatnot. How are you at the Miami Herald and your staff? How are you guys approaching how to deal with that, both on the front end of the election and potentially on the other side of it?
The rise of disinformation has been an issue that we are certainly struggling with, as every news organization is. The question, of course, is do you repeat the wrong claim in order to debunk it? Do you ignore it? Do you do something in between? I think initially most news organizations were thinking about ignoring those claims because they were so ridiculous and we couldn't believe they were getting any traction. But then over time we realized they were. And so we've had a lot more coverage of that. We've focused on it very directly. And I think that we are the better for it. It certainly has become a topic in this country. And here in Miami, it's particularly acute, I think, in some of the Spanish language information that's coming out. And we have assigned reporters directly to that topic to help them, to help readers and listeners talk about what's going on out there and why can't, you know, what can we look at that we know is untrue? How can we prove it? And I think just by having the dialogue, that definitely helps to reduce the noise.
And Amy, we have a caller, Antonio, on line 3. I believe he has a question about disinformation. Antonio, are you with us? Antonio? Arthur?
Yes, Arthur's here.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, Arthur. I did want to give you a chance to, since we're talking about disinformation with Amy
Great.
Driscoll from the Miami Herald, what is your question about disinformation?
Well, it's exactly what Amy was talking about, of what approach to take. My particular concern had to do with Spanish language radio, whether it's focused on the Cuban community, Venezuelan community, or Colombian, that's illegitimately branding the Democrats and Joe Biden as socialist. And I understand that that's having quite a negative impact when you compare how Hillary Clinton was polling compared to Joe Biden currently. And you know, I doubt that a lot of folks even understand the true definition of socialism or realize it's not within the realm of possibility in the United States right now. And I would just like a forum to be able to address it with voters. So I did see articles in the Herald talking about these very issues, but no real solutions to counter it. And I'm not sure if the Democratic Party is doing anything to counter it.
Thank you so much, Arthur. Amy, you know, how are you combating this with your reporters at the Herald? What does that look like as things change?
Well, as I said, we are focusing on it much more directly than we used to, and I think that is helpful. And the people that we've spoken with, Republican analysts we spoke with recently said, you know, yes, the socialism claim particularly does have an impact. And that's something that we're aware of, and so, you know, we try to, rather than, and I think this is a legitimate criticism of the press, that rather than just repeat things, a claim on its face, that a person said it, therefore we repeat it, we're trying to be much more discerning on how we phrase things, whether or not we immediately debunk it right afterwards, or what we, you know, what we actually use, rather than doing it with such an uncritical eye. I think that is a step in the right direction. But I agree with your caller that there needs to be more. It's obviously not just the press's role. It's the political parties themselves. It's the voters, and they're getting their news from all kinds of places now that are not, you know, my newspaper. They get things off of from Facebook and from Twitter and from all sorts of forms of social media. And they don't always have their own methodology for debunking it. So I think teaching people how to recognize this information or to be more critical about where the information is coming from is helpful. But it's certainly a thorny problem that we are all grappling with.
This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Danny Rivero filling in for Tom Hudson. We're speaking with the Miami Herald's political editor, Amy Driscoll. She covered the 2000 presidential election. What do you remember from that time? Have you been thinking about it 20 years later? We're taking your questions about voting. Give us a call at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576.
And I'm Katie Spitalski-Munoz, also filling in for Tom Hudson this week. Amy, before we bring Professor Charles Zeldin back in, I want to take a look back. If we remember, Al Gore initially conceded the race and then took it back and kept fighting. And the Associated Press called the race way too early. So I wonder, what kind of responsibility does the media have to avoid making that kind of mistake this time around in 2020, or to be healthily skeptical of concessions and victory announcements by candidates?
Well, you know, that the 2000 election changed so many things. And one of those was how the media, how the press calls a race. I think we are much more careful than we were then. I think we're slower, which doesn't necessarily always please everybody, but I think it's a more responsible path. We had gotten very accustomed to being able to tell quickly who had won something, and that's no longer the case in a state like Florida, where, as again, your previous guest said, we've had, as recently as 2018, we had three statewide races that were recounts. We were in order to get a recount, you have to be less than 0.5% apart in the vote count. So that's an indication of how narrow things have gotten in Florida, and they remain that way. And so in Florida and in other places, I think we all have become much more patient, and expectations have been lowered as to when we will actually know when somebody has won something. And, you know, that's a maturing of the electoral process, I think.
And Professor Zeldin, you cover political science and history at Nova Southeastern University. I wanted to ask you a similar question in terms of how much should people pay attention to political parties or candidates conceding or claiming victory on election night when there's just so much up in the air? Well, you know, that really means nothing.
It means nothing, and it always meant nothing. The vote isn't official until it's certified by the state. And in every state, that happens well after the election. Florida is actually one of the shorter ones with its 12 to 15 day window for certifying an election. In California, they take a month to count the votes before they think about certifying their elections. So even when, you know, we get the thing on TV and it says winner, 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 it's all provisional winners, because until the final vote is certified, we don't know the actual totals. And it doesn't really matter if it's not close, so we do it. But when the vote is close and every vote matters, that's when we have to be very, very careful. And in a state like Florida, that's the norm.
It does remind me of back to 2018. One of those races, the candidate for Commissioner of Agriculture, Matt Caldwell, actually announced his victory. And later, through the recount process, through the full counting process, Nikki Fried ended up winning that race. So there's an example right there of that kind of thing.
Yes, it does happen. Sometimes you want to declare victory. You want to hope this is the case. It's often what you expect to be the case. But anytime the vote is close, there's always the possibility that as you count late arriving ballots, they might not go in your direction. And so it's one of those situations where calm and patient really is the proper response.
So all this hour, we've been talking about the vote counting process, how recounts work, and what happens until the state certifies the final election results. Professor, is there a better way to do this? Or does Florida election law still come up short? Is it perfect? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm blanking on his name, the second speaker,
Jason Blank.
Yeah, Jason Blank noted, we actually have pretty good laws here in Florida. We learned our lessons the hard way. We took lots of hits to the face and we responded appropriately. Not all states have had that happen, and not all states have updated their election laws. But in terms of better, when I wrote my book on Bush v. Gore, one of the conclusions I came up to was it doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't matter how careful you are if the vote is close, because all elections at the margins get a little squishy. There are ballots that may or may not be counted. There are provisional ballots to be included. There are late arriving mail ballots that may or may not be applicable to the recount process. And so every supervisor of elections begins their election cycle with a prayer. We call it the election supervisor's prayer. And it is, please, Lord, let this not be a close race. Because when it gets close, nobody looks good.
Well, how does it compare to the way that other states are looking now in 2020, like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, who can't even start counting votes until Election Day?
Well, one of the things we learned from 2000 is that you need more time to do counts. Because there are machine issues, there's delays. And so in Pennsylvania and in Wisconsin, they've got hundreds of thousands of mail-in ballots that they haven't even decided if they are valid yet or not. They can't even look at them. So that means starting at 7 a.m. on Tuesday, they will start going through and deciding if the mail-in ballots should be counted or not.
And that's where we're going to have to leave it. Thank you very much. Professor Zeldin teaches political science and history at Nova Southeastern University.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much to Amy Driscoll. She's the Miami Herald's political editor.
Thanks very much.
And finally on the roundup, Election Day is almost here. WLRN has been hearing from first-time voters over the past several weeks.
Miles Mariano Ortia is from North Miami. 2020 is his first presidential election.
My parents came from the Philippines. It was the classic immigrant story of they came with $20 in their pocket. Basically, they just wanted me to have a good place to live. Being a first-time voter, I believe I'm taking the first part in me as an American to create my own future. Well, I turned 18 last year, and I believe I registered to vote outside of, Office Max. I was getting school supplies because it was towards the beginning of the school year. There was a person who was registering people to vote, and so I decided, why not? I voted for, I believe, my city council. During that time, COVID cases were a lot higher, so I was a little bit scared to go out and vote in person. So me and my mom, we decided to do mail-in ballots. It felt empowering, actually, because you feel well, you are. You become a part of the American public life.
Miles Mariano Ortia is a first-time voter from North Miami. He spoke with WLRN's Alyssa Ramos. Floridians have until 7 p.m. on Election Day, November 3rd, to return vote-by-mail ballots. Locations are listed on your county's elections website to drop them off. It's too late to put them in the mail.
In-person early voting ends Saturday in Monroe County and on Sunday in Broward, Miami-Dade, and Palm Beach counties. Tune in to WLRN on Election Day for live election coverage, on the radio and on TV Channel 17. You can also go to WLRN.org to keep track of every race and result.
That'll do it for the South Florida Roundup. The South Florida Roundup is produced by Alexandra Gonzalez. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre.
Lance Dixon is our digital editor. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director.
WLRN's director of radio programming is Jason Zabka. The director of radio operations and show's technical supervisor is Peter J. Meritz. Richard Ives answers phones. I'm Katie Switalski-Munoz.
And I'm Danny Rivero, filling in for Tom Hudson this week. Thanks for calling and listening. The program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.